This episode of Hustle is brought to you by Design Inc., the best place to find creative talent. Need help with a project? Post it on Design Inc. and receive free proposals from the best designers, illustrators, and animators. Join the hundreds of companies and startups that have been connected with the perfect creative for their project. Go to designinc.com/hustle and start your project today.
Welcome back to The Hustle. For those of you that know me, you'll know that I spend almost all of my time obsessing about training designers and building design teams. That's why I'm really excited today to be here with my new friend, Dan Mall. I don't know how many of you guys know Dan Mall, but Dan is a CEO of his own design studio, Super Friendly. Sorry if I got your title there wrong, Dan. They've worked with companies like Google, Apple, New York Times, Carnegie Mellon, About.com, O'Reilly, TechCrunch, Entertainment Weekly, and many, many, many more on and on. Dan's also been a kind enough friend to refer work to my company, which I don't think I've thanked him enough for. And before that, he was design director at Big Spaceship, worked at Happy Cog, and was a technical editor at List Apart. Although he's accomplished a lot, I think what I find most inspirational about Dan is his dedication to elevating our industry and training designers. It's not an easy task, and I know he puts a lot of work into it. Dan, why don't you say hi and tell us about who you are, what you're doing?
Yeah, what's up, Anthony? Thank you for having me on the show. This has been, I'm really excited for this.
Oh, it's my honor, I guarantee you.
Cool. So what can I tell you about?
Well, I mean, there's really three things. You know, the first, give us an overview of Super Friendly and what you guys are doing there at your agency. Talk about your new product, Super Booked, and then let's spend some time talking about apprenticeships in the Super Friendly Academy.
Great. Yeah. So I run a small design collaborative out of Philly called Super Friendly. It's a thing I've been doing since 2012. So just about 5 years coming up in about a month now, 5 years. And it's a little bit of a non-traditional kind of agency, a little bit different than most, which is the reason is that I'm the only employee of Super Friendly. There's nobody else on payroll. And what I basically do is for every project, I try to bring together the right team of people. And so sometimes those are freelancers. Sometimes those are people that have a full-time job, but maybe are moonlighting and, I can use them on nights and weekends. Other times it's collaborating with other design shops or dev shops or tech shops. And really just trying to construct the right team for what we're trying to do. So sometimes I need, people that have certain experience in a certain area. Sometimes I need people that can do a lot of production work. Sometimes I need people who are fast. Sometimes I need people who are cheap. Sometimes I need people who are experts. So I really just try to combine, who are the right people to do this so that we're creating the best product and in the best ways that we can. So been running it that way since it started, and so far so good.
What led you to arrive at that model?
So there's a couple things. I know one of the things that I worked on when I was at Big Spaceship was the Crayola.com redesign, and which was a super fun project. I really enjoyed it. The client was great. But I remember this point in the sales process where we walked into Crayola to pitch, and one of the strategists on my team was formerly an elementary school teacher. And when we walked in, we did our intros, and the strategist on the team did his intro, and he said, "Hey, said his name and said, I'm a digital strategist at Big Spaceship, and I used to be an elementary school teacher before that." And the client was like, "Wait a minute. Like, so you used to be an elementary school teacher for how long? 10 years, 15 years, something like that. And you're going to be the digital strategist on this project?" "Yeah." And he's like, well, then you guys win. Like, that's it. Like, that expertise is something that every other agency that we've talked to, they don't have that expertise in-house. So the fact that happened was so coincidental for us. Like, it wasn't intentional. But I started to realize then that, like, if I have the right expertise, then that situation can manifest more and more. Like, I could just win on that. Now I'm not going to be able to employ strategists that used to be elementary school teachers and strategists that used to be marine biologists and designers that used to be in higher. Like, there's just too many different permutations to employ in house. But I actually know a lot of those people, and they work other places, but that shouldn't stop me from working with them. So my hypothesis in starting Super Friendly was, well, I wonder if I could build a business without those people working full time, but still kind of bring them together for a short amount of time. That business model is called the Hollywood model. I call it the super friend model because of branding, but the Hollywood model is basically modeled after the way that films are made, you know? So movie studios don't employ directors and actors, but that doesn't stop them from making a good movie. So I thought, well, I wonder if that would stop us from making good digital products. And so far it hasn't.
That's really awesome. I mean, it also makes a lot of sense too when you're working on a project, because the skill needs are going to change over the curve of the project. In the beginning, you maybe need a researcher or strategist, and you need someone with great UX chops. And then towards the end, you need like testing and production design. And if there's only one dedicated designer on that entire product, I mean, or project, chances are they're not great at all those things. I mean, they're probably not.
Right.
But being able to rotate people around must be pretty awesome.
Yeah, and you know, the other added benefit of that too is like I've been really fortunate to work at a lot of agencies and watch agencies grow and shrink and make mistakes and succeed. And one of the things that has always been a pain for the agencies that I've been part of is having a bench, right? So like you don't have enough work to occupy people's time, so you got people just sitting around, you know, and you're like, well, we could work on internal projects or we could work on that stuff, but that stuff starts to be a drain on the business. So one of the things that I was really scared of, honestly, in starting Super Friendly was like, what do I do if I have a bunch of people that are just sitting around and I'm running payroll every week? You know, it's not going to stop me. They're not going to say, well, you don't pay us for this amount of time. And so I started to think of like, well, how can I get around that problem? Because I see that as a big drain that a lot of agencies have.
That's really interesting. So I need to ask you a question, and you know, I mean, and answer this as honestly as you can. Do you ever find yourself, you know, thinking or dreaming about wanting to hire anyone full time, or is that just like so in the opposite direction of where you want to go? Is it hard to resist it?
So hard to resist it. So like, all of my experience has been working at agencies that have, you know, 10 people, 12 people, 30 people, 60 people, 100 people. And I'm like, and one of the things I loved about having those jobs is just having all those people around me all the time. So now, like, first of all, I don't have a precedent for a one-person agency. I've never seen it before. And I don't like being lonely. I don't like sitting by myself, you know, in my office. And so I like working with teams. And so there's always this temptation to be like, well, let me hire somebody, or let me work with somebody more regularly than others. And the thing that sort of stops me from doing that, one is that I'm just like, I don't know that I'm ready to be responsible for someone else's livelihood. That scares me. And I've seen other people get very, very stressed out by that. And like, I'm the kind of person who learns from other people's mistakes. I don't have to make mistakes myself to learn from them. So I've seen how that affects other people. I think it would affect me in the same way. So I go, okay, that's not a problem that I want to have to solve. So let me try to figure out a way to not have that problem. And then also, I think the business model prevents me from doing that, because what I've been pitching for the last 5 years is, and this is why Super Friendly is going to be better than every other agency, is because we can pull together a team of experts. You know, we're not just giving work to, well, who on my team is available and, you know, not doing anything right now. I'm not resourcing that way. So the minute I have a full-time employee, I have to change my pitch. I'm like, and then it makes me think like, well, did I actually believe in my pitch then? If I'm actually, you know, changing the business model, maybe it was false that pitch actually works. So I actually do believe in it. And I think that it works. Not all the time. It's not a home run every single time, but I think it gives me an advantage over a lot of the work that I'm in, you know, all the other agencies that I pitch against. And so I believe in it enough that I'm like, philosophically, I want to stick with that, even if that means I don't get to kind of scratch that itch of hiring full-timers.
Yeah. I just thought I would ask you about that. You know, it's something that I think about a lot. And I suppose that model gives you like ultimate flexibility in going in whatever direction you want. If you wanted to put all of your effort on one marquee client for a period of time, you could do that. Or if you want to use the Super Friendly network, you could, you know, scale that up, and you can go in a wide variety of directions without having to, you know, constantly worry about playing the game, you know, quote unquote, that a lot of agencies have.
Yes.
So I think that's pretty cool. And I, you know, maybe one of these days I'll get you to Austin and we can have a, you know, a deeper conversation about that.
I would love that. Yeah.
You know, I think for a while I was wondering, you know, what are they doing over there? You know, cause when you first started your business, it was like a simple splash page. And it wasn't really until we met at Epicurrence that, you know, I learned what you guys are doing, and I think it's super cool. And so I'll ask you one more business about the Super Friendly model. So, you know, because I talk to a lot of people, some people are people that I want to hire at Fundsize and I don't, or maybe working with them as freelancers, but I always make sure that I have time to give advice to people that are trying to consult. What does it take to be a super you know, a super friendly consultant, you know, like,
yeah.
What do you look for?
It's a weird one because like I get people that apply, right? They're like, I get emails that are like, I would like to submit a formal application to become a super friend. And I'm like, that's way too formal. It's not, you know, there's no application process. There's not like people that are in or that are out. So it's interesting that some people kind of read it that way. And that's certainly my fault for not communicating well enough about it. What I always look out for, and this is a thing that I think I've just been doing since I started in this business. Like, I love meeting people. I'm very inspired by what other people do, and especially if they do something different than what I do. Or even if they do the same thing as I do, but differently. I'm just so intrigued by that. Mm-hmm. So like, I look for people that are doing great work. I try to meet them at conferences. I try to comment on their blogs. I try to tweet at them. I try to do, you know, all that kind of stuff just because I'm curious. And I like to keep tabs on those people, you know, just to be like, I want to know what they're up to. I want to know what they're doing. Are they doing something different than me? What can I learn from them? And so everyone like that, I'll generally just try and like keep tabs on what they're doing. And so whenever I meet someone that I'm like, I would love to get to know you better. That's a good area for collaboration. That's a ripe area for collaboration. I remember reading this article about Queen and David Bowie, about how they wrote the song Under Pressure. And Brian May, who was a guitar player, he said in an interview after David Bowie died, he was like, you know, one of the reasons we wrote that song was we wanted to get to know each other better. So we decided the best way to do that was to play music together. So it wasn't like they had this big plan to be like, oh, we're like, okay, we're gonna write this hit and then it's gonna go viral or whatever and we're gonna make a lot of money from it. Like, the plan wasn't that. The plan was like, let's just hang out. And what do we do best in hanging out? We play music. So let's just do that and let's see what happens. And I think the same way about agency collaboration or freelancer collaboration or whatever. Like, I use work as an excuse to get to know people better. So yeah, if we want to get to know each other better, let's do a project together and let's see how it works. You know, I'll try it twice and see how it goes. So, you know, whenever people email me and they say, hey, I'd love to work with you on a super friendly project. I'm like, great, let's get on a call and let's just talk about, like, I want to know what you're into. So I ask a couple questions usually. And those questions are like, what are you better at everybody then? You know, like, what is the thing that you do best in the world? Like, no one else can do better than you. And that question throws a lot of people off. They're like, I like to write HTML. I'm like, yeah, but like you and like 15,000 other people, what do you do better than anybody else? And it doesn't have to be like, well, I write better JavaScript than everybody. It could be like, well, you know, I talked to this one front end developer a couple years ago and I was like, what do you do better than everybody else? Like, what, give me the reason to call you. Give me the reason to go, oh, I know exactly why I should call you. And he's like, well, like I'm really into like HTML and CSS. And I'm like, yeah, but that's not deep enough. That's not specific enough. And so as we got talking more, he was like, you know, I really love to sail. I was like, oh, that's cool. So we talked about sailing for a while. And he takes his kids out every summer and, you know, and sails with them. And we just, you know, we're talking about that for a while. I don't know much about sailing at all.
I think I remember this story. And so tell me if I'm right. He's an expert in sailing. And a client came around that was in the sailing industry. And you're like, I'm calling the sailing guy.
Exactly.
Yes,
exactly. It was a luxury yacht company that they wanted a new website. And I'm like, you know what? I know exactly who to call. And it's that kind of stuff that makes me go like, I want to know what people are good at, because I feel like if I give someone a project that they're really excited about, they're going to do better work for me.
Oh, hell yeah.
If I'm giving them a crappy project, well, why would I expect good work? You know, why would I expect good work from them? So I want to know, like, all right, if a tech project comes in, or if an art project comes in, or if an installation thing comes in, like, who are the people that are going to be really excited about that? And if I could give them really good money and throw them a project that they'd be really great on, they're going to do excellent work for me. You know, it's like, it's just a matter of time then. And so I like to keep tabs on as many people as I can, just to be like, so that I know when a project comes up, I know exactly who to call. I'm not like, I'm never Google searching like a PHP developer, right? Like, because that's not a good way to establish trust for a client, right? If I don't trust the people that I'm working with, how can I say to a client, yeah, we're going to do good work for you? So instead, if I can trust these people, if I have a little bit of a relationship with them, if we have some rapport, then I know exactly how we're going to work together, or at least I know enough to want to work together. So that's one question that I ask is like, what's your thing? You know, I usually ask that. And then I usually go over logistics. you know, tell me about your rates and how do you like to bill? Do you like to bill for time? Do you like to do fixed fees? Like, what do you like to do? And how would you like to work? And what's a dream project look like between us? Like, what would we work on? And that gives me a much better sense of, I know exactly when to call you on this thing. And I do the same thing when collaborating with other agencies. So especially with other agencies, what I've tended to do recently is I just send them my MSA. Like, let's write an MSA together and sign an MSA together without a work order attached, so that when we get to a point where a good project comes up, we're not figuring out, okay, well, how would we do this? And who subcontracts under who? And, you know, what are the terms going to be here? Like, we already have that stuff figured out so that we can hit the ground running on a work order. So I think that principle is one that I try to apply everywhere. So with a, maybe, you know, with a freelancer or an individual, I may not sign an MSA quite yet, but I just want to kind of get like, give me the highlights. With another agency, there's a little bit more terms to kind of work out. So having some paperwork behind it, I think, is helpful.
So do you keep a CRM of all these designers and developers and tag them on what their skill sets are and the interests are?
Well, it's funny that you asked. So like, I've kept notes for years in a notes file, and then I transferred that to a Google spreadsheet. And I forget who said it. I'm sure a bunch of people have said it, but like, you know, a great MVP for any app is how long you've been maintaining a Google spreadsheet of it. You know, so like, I've had this Google spreadsheet for years, and I'm like, I got to turn this into a thing. And that's a part of what Superbooked is. So Superbooked is a new app that I'm building with a friend. And sorry for the plug here, but you gave me permission to do it earlier. So
I'm still dying for an invite.
So I will get it to you. We'll talk about that after this call. So Superbooked is really, you know, one part of Superbooked is you can make lists, and you can make any list that you want. So in my personal Superbooked account, I have lists of designers and developers and art directors and back-end developers and front-end developers and copywriters. So I have by skill. I also have by geography, like Philly designers and Philly developers. I have that. I have a dream team list, like who are my top ones. I have agencies to refer, you know, so if I have work that I can't do, or we're too busy, or it's not a good fit for us, but it's still a good project, who do I want to pass this along to? You know, so part of Superbooked is having these like little black books of, you know, who are the people that I want to talk to? And for each of those, you can add personal notes. So I could say what their hourly rate, what might be, or this person's into sailing, you know, or, you know, only works part-time or moonlights because I have a full-time job over here. You know, minimum project is this. So there's just kind of a notes field that you can associate with each person. And so that's part of it. It's like, I wanted a place to put it that was more intelligent than a Google spreadsheet. Like, eventually I want Superbooked to tell me who should be on a project. Like, I don't need to be looking through it. So it's all kind of, that's like a big part of what Superbooked is designed around.
That's really cool. And you know, for the, you know, you're hearing Dan talk about this, and it's clear that he spends a lot of time outside of his work, like doing this stuff. And for I just want to say this, because a lot of people ask me, like, well, what does it take to like start a business, right? Like, how does a company like Fundsize or Superfriendly like start a business? And the one thing that I tell people, and I think you would agree, is that, well, it's not just necessarily because I'm talented, it's because I spent my whole career meeting people.
Yes, absolutely. The whole premise of Superbooked, or like the tagline that we came up with, is Superbooked connects you to your next great gig through people you trust. And like, when I think about my work, and I'm curious about your side too, is like, if this is true for you, when I think about the best projects I've done, they have always, like 99%, come through a friend of a friend. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I have a friend that I used to work with somewhere, or maybe I met at a conference or at a workshop or something, and somebody's like, hey, I work at this company and we were actually shopping around for a redesign. Like, would you guys want to bid on it? Or like, you know, oh, I have a, you know, my father-in-law works at this company and they need a new website. Like, would you want to bid on that thing? Or, you know, a person that I worked with at an agency that's now the head of product at some in-house place. And they're like, we could use some help on this thing. Like, all of the best gigs are that way. I mean, I'm curious to know if that resonates with you, or if you guys get work that same way.
For us, absolutely. I don't think we've ever worked on anything over the last 4 years and maybe 200 projects. I think maybe only two or three like weren't direct referrals.
There you go. Yep. Yeah. And I feel like that's a really common story, you know, and it's crazy that like, there aren't more tools to kind of capitalize on that idea. So I was like, you know, after a while, I was just frustrated that there weren't. And I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm going to try and build one, and, you know, and let's see how that goes. And I feel like, you know, if you called me and you said, I have a $40,000 project. We can't do it right now. We're booked up, but you know, I want to pass it to somebody I trust. Would you take that? Between that and if I got a cold lead from my website for a $100,000 project, I would take yours hands down. Like, because the qualified lead turns out to be way more valuable than a cold lead that might even be higher priced, but it might fall apart or the client might not trust in the same way. Like, I'd much rather take the warm lead than the cold one.
Yeah, that's really smart. Yeah, that's really true. Yeah, that's
so that's what you know, so that's kind of the lay of the land for Superbooked.
So Superbooked is currently in alpha or private beta, or where are you at with that right now?
Yep, so it's in private beta right now, like probably for another couple of weeks. We have got some people in there just kind of kicking the tires. There's, you know, it's buggy. I think it's like there's good functionality in there, but it's certainly some stuff that just isn't worked out yet. So probably for the next couple of weeks, maybe another month or two at most, we're just sort of having people, you know, test it, people that we trust, like in there and giving us suggestions on what can be better. And then sort of opening it up to the public. There'll probably be a staggered release. It probably wouldn't be like, you know, we flip a switch and all of a sudden anybody can sign up, but we're probably going to do maybe something similar to what Dribbble did, which is, you know, give everybody that's in there a handful of invitations and just kind of let it spread organically that way. And that way we can sort of track its growth a little bit, or be in a little bit more control of the growth, because I don't know that we could handle, you know, like a great problem to have would be like on day one, 2,000 people sign up. I don't know that we could handle that. I think it would be nice to have kind of a little bit more controlled growth there. Never built a product before in this way. You know, I've helped clients do that, but never actually built one in this way. So I don't know what I'm talking about, but I think that's kind of the way that we're going to do it.
That's cool. So it's clear that you spend a lot of time, you know, meeting people and thinking intentionally about, you know, building great teams so that you can do great work. But let's talk about what happens when you need to, you know, like pull the switch on a team. Actually, you know what? Never mind. Let's talk about the Super Friendly Academy, because I really want to get to that.
Sure.
Because I think that's the thing that I'm the most interested in asking you about. Your apprenticeship program seems really amazing. I mean, I've heard you.
I like it.
You and I have talked about it a little bit. I've seen some interviews with you, and I recently watched a video that you did at a conference. I'm sorry, I can't remember which one, but when I
maybe 99U.
Yeah, it was awesome. So let's talk about apprenticeships, because I think it's important. You know, like on so many levels, I think apprenticeships are a great way to get in. You know, like to completely change careers. You know, like you're a bartender and you want to become a designer. Or maybe maybe you're a senior designer and you just want to go learn a new design industry. It's a great way to like to level up and learn. But you have made a program of this. Tell us about the Super Friendly Academy.
Cool. So Super Friendly Academy is a 9-month apprenticeship program. I'm a word guy, so I think that there's a big difference between internships and apprenticeships. So I can talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. But it's an apprenticeship, not an internship. It's deep. It's not shallow like an internship would be. And it's generally for people who are, like you described, you know, career switchers, people that have like, oh yeah, I heard this design thing is cool. I heard this tech thing or coding is good, but I don't know much about it. It's not for, you know, I'm a junior designer and I'd like to level up to be a senior designer. I think there are a lot of good programs that are already out there for that. What I found lacking was, you know, I'm a substitute teacher. How do I get into tech? You know, so it's mostly designed for that particular thing.
So why do you care about that?
Oh, a lot of reasons. So one is that like so many people did that for me when I started. Like I talked to a lot of people who don't have mentors, and I'm like, I've had hundreds, you know, like I don't know what it's like to not have a mentor. And I certainly wouldn't like, I feel like I'm very fortunate to be where I am today. Like financially, I'm not, you know, I'm not really wanting for anything. I have run a successful business. I'm able to have time to spend time with my kids and vacation and also build products and experiment with things. And like, those are opportunities that a lot of people don't have. And so I feel like I wouldn't have been able to do that had other people not spent time with me to show me the ropes and show me how things work and how they could go and how I could get better, and like really spending time with me to help me develop that. So one is this, just the idea of paying it forward. You know, I feel like if I didn't do that, that would be just total drag. Like if I was like, great, I'm glad people did that for me, now I'm not going to do that for anyone. Like it would just be so selfish. So I think that's one part of it. The other part of it is like, you know, in our industry, we have a diversity problem. Like it is incredibly problematic. It's no surprise why I think the products that we build are really shallow. It's that we have generally a very myopic perspective on what the world needs. And I don't think that that's malicious in any way, but I think that it's a thing that, when we have a bunch of people that think a certain way, we're going to get a one-sided view of how the world works. And I've seen this gap like kind of growing in that there's a handful of people that are very, very good at what they do. Designing, coding, product managing, project managing, like professionals in our industry, in digital, in tech, that are like, you know, that are just moving from company to company, and they're going from $60,000 a year to 80 to 100 to 120 to 140 to 200 to 250, and they're moving around Silicon Valley and Austin and New York and like and all these places. And these people get horse traded from company to company. They work at Google, and then Apple poaches them, and then Facebook poaches them, and then Spotify poaches them, and Airbnb poaches them, and then they just like they get better and better, and that's awesome. That's great for our industry. But then there's this whole other faction of people that don't have any access into that. And the better the people on one side get, the wider that gap increases. So like I think the stat from the US Bureau of Labor Statistics was, I think last year, 8 million people unemployed in the US. And also at the same time, something like 200, I don't have the stat on top of my head, I apologize, something like 200,000 vacant tech jobs or IT jobs, right? So like, well, there's 8 million people that are unemployed, and there's all these tech jobs that are vacant. Like, can't one thing fill the other? Like, don't those two things match up and line up pretty well? And the problem is there's no one to help those people in that faction move into those jobs. Like, nothing allows them to do that. So the only way that the tech companies can fill those vacant jobs is they go, well, let's take the people who already know how to do it and let's put them into those jobs. And so that recirculation, I think, widens this gap between these two types of people. And in the unemployed type of people, there are a lot of stereotypes that exist, a lot of generalizations that tend to be true. Those are generally lower income people. They're generally urban. They're generally people of color, right? And those are the people, not coincidentally, that we want more of in our industry. So like, there's this whole gap between these two groups of people. And I think that apprenticeship is a great way to bridge that gap. I think it's like, apprenticeship is when you take somebody and you say, I'm going to show you the ropes. Like, if you think about the way that blacksmiths were apprenticed in the 1800s, they would, you know, you'd take a 7-year-old kid and you'd go, you're going to move in with me for the next 9 years. And they move in with you and you teach them how to blacksmith, but you don't just teach them the craft. You teach them how to be a professional. You teach them how to wash their clothes and make their bed and be clean and cook and how to charge a customer when they come in and how to do customer service and how to speak to someone who wants a new horseshoe on their horse. Like all of that stuff. It's not just, oh, let me show you how to do the metal work, or let me show you how to, you know, use fire to melt stuff properly, or you know, I don't know what a blacksmith does, but like it's more than just that part. It's all the stuff around it. And there's not a lot of people that do that. There's the code schools and the general assemblies and all that stuff that take people and say, we're going to give you the trade. Like, we're going to show you how to code Ruby or how to write JavaScript or how to set up Node or, you know, or whatever. But there's not a lot of, let me show you how to meet deadlines. Let me show you how to scope a project. Let me show you how to make a client happy without compromising your own beliefs. Like that stuff, like I've never seen a course on that.
Yeah.
Like I've never seen a Skillshare on that, a lynda.com course on that. And I don't think those things are for that, but I think apprenticeship is where we can put some of those things.
There's so much there in what you just said, but let me try to break down some of the bigger points, and not in any particular order, but there, I'm going to paraphrase here, but you said, in short, choosing people to work with you that are not like you is generally a great thing is for everyone. And
yes,
that to me, like, is pretty much how we run our business. Like if everyone is an orange, then all you're going to get is orange flavor design. You know, yes. if you have like people, you know, people in my, I don't understand why this is such a challenge for people, because to me it's the default. You want to have the most diverse team, different walks of life, you know, seniors and juniors and people from everywhere. Put these people together and, you know, in their different shapes and flavors, and that's how you're going to get great things. I don't know how it, I mean, unless you're like a heavily funded Bay Area company, I don't know how you're able to always employ the top, you know, 10%. And if you're exactly. an agency, yeah. I don't know how you're making a profit without investing in juniors. And then furthermore, investing in juniors is not necessarily a burden. When you're training someone, you're thinking about how to do something and you're leveling yourself up. I don't know.
Absolutely.
And you know,
absolutely. Can I add one thing
to that
real quick? Cause I think it's so the point that you make is so important about like, you got to work with people who don't think like you do. Like that's diversity. Like we think about diversity as, you know, like, well, I'm white. And so diversity is somebody who's not white, like somebody who's brown or yellow or black or purple or red or whatever. Like, sure. That's diversity. Totally agreed. But even if you have a team that is white and black and green and brown and red and yellow, if all those people think the same way, then it's actually not really diversity, or at least it's not in that way. Mm-hmm. So diversity includes all of those different angles. It includes like people's skin color, but it also includes where they're from. It includes like whether or not like somebody who is suburban minded versus somebody that's urban minded. Those are different perspectives. Somebody that grew up in the hood and somebody that grew up in, you know, in on a farm, those are different mindsets. And like having all of those mindsets represented on a team makes for great, great product, because it makes for great debate, it makes for good discussion, it makes for multiple points of view. Like it's just so, so good there. Like one example that I want to share is I was talking to Bob Baxley, who is the former head of Pinterest, the head of design at Pinterest.
Wasn't he also at Apple before that?
And he shared the story with... Yeah, he was like, I mean, that dude is super smart. I could, like, I just want to eat his brain. like, he shared the story to me about, like, there was an app that was built at a hackathon that was, like, I think an urban-centered hackathon. And these kids built an app to help you schedule your court date, right? So, like, in their neighborhood, everybody has a court date and people get arrested and thrown in jail for missing their court date. So they built an app to help remind you when your court date is. Now, I've never had a court date. Luckily, I've never been arrested. I've never been detained for anything. Has it ever occurred to me to build an app to help you remind you about your court date? Never, never. Does it occur to, and I'm going to stereotype a little bit here, does it occur to, you know, Bay Area companies? Probably not. Does it occur to inner city Chicago kids? Probably, you know? And I think that's the kind of myopia that I'm talking about. It's like, if you don't have that perspective represented, why would you ever think that that was a need? Why would you even know that that's a need? You know? And that's like innocent ignorance, but it's still it's ignorance, you know? And I feel like that different perspective makes us go, well, instead of building another to-do app, like maybe we should build a court date app, you know? And to some people that sounds ludicrous, but then when you think about it, you're like, well, wow, that actually provides a great service for people. Like that's stopping people from going to jail. Like that is an important thing in our society. But there aren't as many people focusing on that problem as there are like how to make a new calendar app, you know? So I think that's an important thing about like why something like an apprenticeship is a useful tool in solving that problem.
Yeah. I mean, at least with you and I, there's no argument. I mean, you got to have this way of thinking, these kind of programs in place to do great work. I mean, there's obviously totally. A lot of other benefits for, you know, business owners that we don't necessarily have to talk about today unless you want to, but there's, you know, like there's math. You've shown the math at a high level in your video. If anyone wants to see it, you should look at it. But you know, there's a lot of things to consider when you're building a team. From, you know, like if you have a whole bunch of senior people, for example, how long is it going to be until Facebook, you know, like steals them all, right?
Exactly.
And all that money,
exactly.
All that money that you spent in training them, and if you're not, you know, like building up, then I don't know. Like, and I don't really know if. You know, no one ever gave me a guidebook that says this is how you do it. But at our shop, we make sure and we try really hard to make sure that our team is balanced in super senior people, mid-career people, and juniors, which include apprentices. So it's intentionally 33, 33, 33. And it's not just to
nice.
Build a diverse team, which is probably the most important thing, but it's also to make sure that we're able to put fulfill the needs of a wide variety of projects and budgets and concerns and areas of interest. And I just don't think a lot of people, and there's obviously lots of people that, you know, have been building apprentice programs, but I think yours is probably one of the more thoughtfully constructed. Tell me if I'm wrong, but from what I understand, it's a 9-month program. The first 3 months are completely unpaid, and it's just about learning, mm-hmm. building the yep. fundamentals, and the next 3 months are paid, but it's like more about putting those things into practice, like you know starting at certain areas that are low risk, and then in month 9 they're working on master projects and getting ready for looking for their next step because you don't employ them. So you're right. You're putting them out there, and you've never said this unless I missed it, but is a part of the reason why you do this to like help your local economy? Like is a side goal here of like for you elevating the quality of design in Philadelphia?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think like I love Philly. I was just about born and raised here. I grew out of love for it when I moved away to Brooklyn for a couple of years. But like, absence makes the heart grow fonder. Yeah. As soon as I moved to Brooklyn, I was the Philly guy. I was the Philly guy at my New York agency. And I love that. And my family's in Philly. And so certainly anything that I can do for Philly, I will do. Like I've worked on Philly.com. It was one of my favorite projects in the last couple of years, just because like I use it every day. Like I read Philly.com. That's where I get my news. How awesome is it that I get to help improve that experience for myself and for other people? So like certainly helping the local agencies, the local product shops by helping to foster talent and grow talent that is like grown here and harvested here and put to good use here. That's definitely important, but it's certainly not exclusive. I think, I don't encourage any of my apprentices to stay in Philly unless they want to stay in Philly. If they want to go elsewhere, I think it's a good excuse to go elsewhere. Like I had one apprentice who was like, his dream was to ski. He's like, I just want to ski. Like I want to have enough money that I can ski, and I can't do that working in convenience stores. And I was like, great. So learn to be a developer, freelance, and work for 6 months and go ski for 6 months, and he's not going to do that in Philly. There's no good skiing in Philly, but he can go, I have a bunch of friends that do the same thing. They go and work for 6 months and freelance with an agency. Then they go up to Whistler for 6 months or then they go to, Utah or to Colorado or wherever, and just ski for 6 months until they run out of money, and then they freelance again. Like that's a pretty good life for somebody who wants to do that. Like that's pretty much awesome. So if that's something that apprentice wants to do, I certainly am not going to stop them and say no, you gotta, like, this is for Philly, like you gotta do it for Philly.
Yeah. Well, just to kind of put this in perspective, maybe you could just tell us really quick the story of your apprentice Greg.
Yeah, sure. So Greg was my first apprentice. Greg was also my brother-in-law. When we moved back to Philly, we moved into this old church that was like pretty run down.
You live in a church?
I do, yeah. It's not as glamorous as it sounds. It's like, it's not like a church with a steeple or anything like that, but it's like a building that used to be the community church. Oh, okay. So like maybe when they had 30 people here, right? Then they outgrew it and they moved to a proper church building, and then they left this one. But you would drive up to it and you'd be like, what's that weird purple triangular window? like stained glassy looking window in the front. Like a lot of people, like if I order pizza, the delivery person will always be like, what is this building? And I'm like, well, it's my house, but it used to be a church. And they're like, oh, okay, now I get it. So it's kind of weird looking. It looks a little bit like a house, but it looks like something else weird too. So we moved into this place. It was pretty run down, and I'm terrible with renovations or home improvement. Like I'm just awful with my hands. But my brother-in-law, he's kind of worked all these odd jobs every year. Like he worked in roofing 1 year, and then he worked at a convenience store, and then he worked retail, and then he worked building pools, and he was just tired of doing that. So he's like, look, let me make you a deal. If you, like, I will renovate your house for you enough that you could live in it. So I'll do demolition, I'll put up new drywall, just get it in good shape for you to move into if you teach me how to be a web developer. I was like, yeah, that sounds great. Like, that's a great deal. It's a great deal for me. It's a great deal for him. So he and a few friends kind of got our house in good shape. And then he spent 9 months with me. And we didn't know it was going to be 9 months at the time. It was more like, well, just I don't know, hang out a couple days a week, bring a laptop, I'll give you some books, I'll, you know, we'll do some lessons, and when to get to a good point, I'll maybe like pull you into a couple of projects that I'm working on. So it's very organic, like no real curriculum or anything. And then around the nine-ish month mark, eight-ish months, you know, we looked over his past work and I was like, you know, I think you have seven or eight solid portfolio pieces. You could probably pull together a portfolio that you could shop around. So he, you know, spent a couple of weeks making a portfolio, shopped it around, you know, and within, I think, 6 days of when he first sent it out, he got a job offer from an agency in Philly. So now he's a developer at an agency in Philly called Blue Cadet, and he's building like touchscreen kiosks that if you go to any museum, they work on that kind of stuff. So like all the touchscreens that you see in these museums, all these installations, he's building all of that stuff.
That's really cool. Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. And so how many, you just recently opened this up, right? For people to formally apply, like how many,
I did.
I'm sure your inbox is full. I mean, how are you deciding who makes the cut and how many do you have at a time?
I've had up to five at a time, and that was, in one way, more taxing than having one. You know, I guess obviously, but in other ways, I was like, oh, this it kind of solves itself a little bit, because if I have one at a time, I'm teaching that person, you know, one at a time. But if I have five at a time, and they're not like a cohort, that's not like five who start at the same time. It's more like, you know, a person starts and another one starts 2 months later, and then another one starts a month later, like. The more advanced ones can help the ones that are behind, because my time is still limited. Like I still do client work. I'm on phone calls all the time. And oftentimes I'm on a phone call when somebody's having a problem debugging a browser bug or something. And I can't always be there to kind of help talk them through it. So instead, some of the other apprentices are like, oh, I got this one. I'll help out. And so it's nice to kind of have that staggering. So I've had up to five at a time. One of the things I want to experiment with is like, what happens if I have 10 at a time or 20 at a time, or like what's the cap? Like where does it stop scaling, or where does it get to the point where it scales like out of control for
then
me?
You got,
like,
then you got super have to bring friendly in somebody schools. Else.
Yeah, exactly. And which, like, I don't know if that's a bad thing. Like maybe that's what it should be, or maybe it's not. So I'm not sure. I just haven't quite figured that out yet. But yeah, like you said, I opened it up, you know, when I did that talk at 99U, I kind of opened it up and said, all right, anybody can apply. And I'm sitting on like 50 or 60 emails that I just haven't gotten back to. And like, so anybody listening that applied, I'm sorry. I promise I'll get back to you. It's just like, it's just on the list of things to do. And so really the bottleneck that I'm finding, which is obvious in hindsight, but the bottleneck I'm finding is just like, how quickly can I get back to people about some of this? 'Cause not all of them are going to go through with it, you know? And like I've had people apply from India and the UK and New York and Philly. And, you know, I haven't quite figured out how to do a remote one yet. So I kind of require that they have to be in Philly and be in the space with me. And a lot of people said, hey, I'll move to Philly for 9 months. I'm ready to do this. But what I find is that there's a good majority of people that are already overqualified for it. You know, like I get a bunch of people that apply that are like, you know, I have a little bit of experience with WordPress. I've been kind of hacking sites together and I've been, you know, I've been designing a little bit on the side. I've been posting some stuff to Dribbble. And I'm like, well, you already have like what an 8 month apprentice would have, you know, like you already have that stuff. So rather than moving to Philly for 9 months and really not getting paid for most of it, you know, you're not going to make a lot here. I pay a little bit, but I don't pay a ton. Rather than doing that, why don't you volunteer to take an unpaid internship at a local agency, right? If you're already willing to give up 9 months of your time for free, just about, why don't you do that at an agency that you could get a full-time job with afterwards, right? Just get your foot in the door. Call them up and say, hey, I'd love to do a 3 month unpaid internship where I just get to learn from you. And I'd love to talk to you about after that, about if I do well, whether or not I can stay and you'd pay me as a junior person or as a paid intern or something like that. That's much more viable, because after the apprenticeship here, like you said, I don't hire people full time. So if I don't hire people full time, you got to start that thing all over again after 9 months, right? Now you have to apply. Now you have to find agencies and get your foot in the door there. So you might as well get a 9 month head start on that. If you've already tinkered around with WordPress or designing or whatever, well, great. You're already ahead of a lot of apprentices start, you know? So if you're at that point, call your local agency and say, you know, I'll do it for free. I just want to hang out, you know, because that's what you'd be doing here.
Yeah. I think a lot of people just forget that that's an option. You know, I think that, you know, not to discount some of these other programs. I mean, some of them are really good for the right people, but some people are spending, you know, 12 grand to like go through General Assembly or something, and they still need an apprenticeship, right? Like, I think for some people, It might be better just to go take an unpaid or paid apprenticeship and learn, and you know, and learn that way. And or maybe, you know, maybe there's a chance you'll get, you know, you get paid a small wage, but that's sometimes better than, like, you know, going into debt to learn. You know, like, I mean, for everyone, there's exactly. there's different options. I mean, at our company, we've always had an apprentice program, but it was never, it didn't really start as like, oh, well, this is, it didn't start out as, oh, we want to train designers. It was out of necessity because we knew that in Austin, we were going to need to train designers to be effective at product design. That's changed in the last five years. There's there's a lot more designers here now than it used to be, but we've always done that. We always knew that it would be an important way to make sure we're growing the team because we know we can't always, you know, hire seniors. So, you know, we hire as many of them as we can, but I don't know. Sometimes I wish that young people would, or even if they're just interested in, you know, what the difference of like working at your company versus my company is. It's very low risk to take an unpaid internship and go find out.
Yeah, exactly. Because like you're not, if you ask somebody to pay you, you're asking them to take a risk. If you say, look, I just want to be around, take no risk, right? Like, don't pay me. Just let me hang out for a bit. I would be like, sure. Like, that's a no brainer. Yeah. You want to come here and hang out and see what we do. And then one day you might be able to contribute to it. Well, of course, there's very little downside to that. I mean, there are a few, but like the upsides outweigh the downsides. And you know, Anthony, I'm sure you've seen this too. Like, it's hard to talk a client into a $100,000 project. It's much easier to talk them into a $10,000 discovery project and then parlay that into the next $90,000 gig. Yeah. Once you got your foot in the door, it's so much easier. And so the same thing applies for interns or getting your first job. Volunteer. Like, if you want to do that, you know, do it. And like that's a way to get your foot in the door, but you can be upfront about what your expectations are too. I'd like to do it unpaid for 3 months, and then I'd like to talk to you about what it looks like to be paid after that. I would respect that if somebody said that to me. You know, it shows initiative. It shows that you have a plan. It shows that you're willing to work towards something. It shows that there's an end date. Like, it creates accountability. Like, there's a lot of good that comes from that. And honestly, that's the kind of stuff that I try to teach my apprentices, is like, here's how you negotiate a thing, whether it's negotiating with a client or a freelance rate or, you know, or negotiating a design review or something like that. Like, it's the same skill, you know? So if you're already willing to do that up front, that's a great sign for any employer.
Yeah. I think another quote you said was, tell me if I'm wrong, but it's something like, I'm going to teach you design, but you can apply that to life. And I think that's right. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think there's a lot of opportunities for people to get in. I think there's a lot of opportunities for people to get into design. Not everyone is going to be successful at it, but there's ways to get into this field. You know, from my perspective and where I sit, like, I look more at the culture fit, like, you know, the way someone's wired and you know, and what they feel like, you know, hanging out with. You know, I know that I have to make sure that someone is prepared before they get staffed under, you know, our design directors to, like, you know, be responsible for client work. But, and we don't have like a very, you know, formal program. It's pretty much sink or swim, but we found a way, I think, to make it happen. I probably need to get your opinions on the way our program works sometime and see if we can figure out a way to make it better.
Yeah, sure. I mean, like, one of the things specifically with my program, and admittedly, it's a thing that I did to challenge myself to see if I could figure it out. So I'm like, I see a problem here. I would like to see if I could fix it. And the problem is the idea of self-starters, right? So many people say, well, what are we looking for? Oh, self-starters. Well, if you got self-starters, then really you have little role as a mentor, because a self-starter can go through it. Like, that's the whole point of them being a self-starter, is that they can do it on their own. They don't really need that mentorship. Will it help? Absolutely. But they don't actually need it. So for my version of the apprenticeship, I'm like, well, these aren't self-starters. Like, that's the point. The point is they do need help. They need hand-holding. They need training, you know, in order to do that. Some people learn that way, and that's okay. Like, I don't buy the mentality that self-starters are the only people that can make it in this industry. I believe, you know, and I could be wrong about this, but like, my hypothesis right now is that you can create self-starters. You can turn someone who is not a self-starter into a self-starter. And I have some evidence of that. I also have some evidence of the contrary. So I'm sort of batting 500 on that one. I'm not sure how it's going to net out yet.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I almost wish you and I lived in the same city, because I feel like we could hang out every night and have some wonderful conversations about this. And when our company started to grow and I was going through the transition of figuring out, well, am I really a designer anymore? Am I a creative director? Am I a CEO? Like, what am I? when I really thought about it, I realized that the only thing that I really cared about was training designers. And
interesting. Wait, what? So why is that important for you? I'm curious. Like, I'm always curious about why other people do it, because I'm like, I know why I do it, but that doesn't mean it's the same reasons for everybody else. So, like, why is it important to you?
Well, there's really two reasons. The first one is pretty much what you said. Like, I've always had a mentor, but I've always sought one out. You know, someone to learn from for different reasons. But the second one that may be a little bit more powerful to me is that, okay, here it is. So I was going through a really rough time, just battling with where am I, right? Because I went from the guy that thought he was responsible for like 90% of the pixels to the person that was just doing sales. And I started going through these periods of time where, like, well, am I even valuable in this team anymore? Like, should I even be here? Like, do I deserve to be in this company that I created? And I really struggled with that. And then I really thought about it, and I started to notice some patterns throughout my career, no matter what I was doing. Like, I first started out freelancing, and what did I do? I went and, you know, trained my brother how to do HTML because I needed someone to help me, like, with my little freelance business. And then when I worked at Behavior, I was not the best designer. I was definitely not the best designer there. But I made it a point to, like, train up the junior designers so that we could all do better together. And, you know, and then I met my wife, and I realized that most of the people that I surrounded myself with were people that I was training on how to do design. And all those years that I thought I was doing the design myself, I really wasn't. I realized that I was the kind of guy that was better at assembling the right team and setting up for success, not necessarily the best designer in the room.
Interesting. It's scary to me how closely our mentalities align on that one, because I've always felt the same way. Like, I've always been an okay designer, but just okay. And what I am more passionate about and what I think I'm better at is helping other people who are already better than me get even better than that, you know? And so, like, I feel like that really is my chief skill. It is being able to do that. And I think that there aren't a lot of people that do that. So I figure, well, if there are more people that are actually better designers, but they just need a little bit of unlocking, and I'm a person that can do that for them, maybe that's the way that I can provide value is in that way. So it's curious to me to always kind of meet people that have that kind of same skill set.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's nothing that makes me feel better than seeing people leave our studio and go do amazing things. I mean, obviously, I don't want people to leave, but right. but I feel the same if someone is successful staying in our company and if someone is successful outside. So I don't know. I just try to look at that and that way, and I think that's what, you know, that's what keeps me ticking. That's why I was that's why I'm very excited to have you on the show. You know, I know we were supposed to have this conversation months ago, but I really appreciate you making time to, you know, to talk about all these awesome things that you're doing.
It's my pleasure.
I know you got a lot going on, but, like, what do you hope to accomplish this year?
That's a good question. I mean, so Superbooked is on my mind a lot. I just wrote a post that's going to be published probably in another day or two about, like, productivity. And there's this great site that Alex Dulaz used to run, the Pastry Box. He now has a new site called Super Yes More, and it's all about productivity. So he asked me to write something for him, and so this is, like, fresh in my mind. And one of the things about productivity for me in a lot of the reading that I'm doing is a lot of it is based on, you know, what's my mission and, like, really setting aside time to accomplish that mission. And so I was like, well, oh man, I don't know. What is my mission? And what I've come to and arrived at so far is I think that my mission, at least when it comes to work, is connecting people to opportunities that they wouldn't have had otherwise. Like, I feel like that's the thing that I'm good at, and that's the thing that I can do for people. And so that's kind of what's been on my mind, like, from a high level, in, like, at least for the next quarter. So I've set some quarterly goals for myself. There's like a handful of them, and they're all kind of centered around that thing. So one of them is just getting Superbooked live, because I think part of that is, Superbooked can help people get gigs. You know, it can help freelancers and agency owners and like, that whole feast or famine thing that comes with freelancing or client service maybe we can reduce that scariness and that fear so that more people can do it, or that the same amount of people can do it more effectively. So that's one thing. And the same thing is true for Super Friendly. I think Super Friendly counts as part of that, is that that it's about connecting clients to opportunities that they might have had. And to be honest, some of that opportunity might be better revenue, you know, or some of that might be just making more money, but some of it also might be reaching an audience that they might not have been able to reach without, you know, that app or that site or that, you know, that social strategy or whatever it is. So I've been trying to focus on, you know, very tactical things, but also through the lens of how can I help connect people to those opportunities that maybe is like just a little bit out of reach? And certainly the apprenticeship kind of applies in that same vein too, is, you know, people that are all like super smart and really ambitious and passionate, but they just need that little bit of like extra skill set that they weren't able to have on their own to be able to go and do great things. So like what's next for me is really just figuring out how that manifests like in apps and services and training and talking and conversations.
Well, Dan, you know, everything that you've done is awesome. I mean, what you do for the industry is awesome. I love watching you speak. Love to hang out some more. So if you ever find yourself in Austin, give us a holler. And maybe if I'm out your way,
yeah,
we should
we'll do.
Get together, hang out more often.
That would be awesome. And you said, you know, I would love it if you lived nearby. So if you ever want to move to Philly, I can do something to scare my neighbors away and make some of those houses vacant.
I'm sure we could probably do something to get one of us on a plane. I think we could probably figure that out.
Yes. I'm all for that.
Well, Dan, how can people find you on the interwebs?
The best way is Twitter. So I'm Dan Mall on Twitter, DanMall, Mall like the shopping mall. That's probably the best way. I keep DMs open so anybody can DM me. That's probably the easiest and fastest way to get a hold of me. For anybody that prefers email, dan@danielmall.com.
Oh, man.
Those are probably the best ways.
Thanks, Dan, for making time. Thanks, everyone,
for
tuning into the Hustlecast. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Hustle is made by Funsize, a digital design agency that works with inspiring product teams around the world. Learn more about us at funsize.co. This season of Hustle is brought to you by Design Inc., the best place to find creative talent and receive free proposals for your project. Go to designinc.com/hustle and get started today. If you're a designer and you'd like to join, you can apply at designinc.com/apply. Also, thanks to Graveyard Teeth for the music and Black River Audio for mixing the show.